This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
loudradio@gmail.com. We love hearing from our listeners. If you have any ideas about future radio shows, or perhaps you're involved with a community event that you'd like KBOO listeners to know about, let us know. Again, the email is outloudradio@gmail.com. Now, an event is coming up that is a large charitable organization. Basically, the Red Dress Party is happening May 4th. That's a Saturday. And the Red Dress Party is a nonprofit organization, and each year, profits from the Red Dress Party are donated to local charities. Now, one thing that makes this party unique is everyone who attends the event wears a red dress. That's everybody. So the Red Dress Party is happening again Saturday, May 4th at the Audio Cinema Building located at 226 Southeast Madison Street here in Portland. Now, if you'd like to attend this Red Dress Party, we do have a pair of tickets to give away. Please give us a call at 503-231-8032. And as a reminder, everyone who goes to this party has to wear a red dress. So if you're interested, we do have a pair of tickets. Again, the phone number is 503-231-8032. And give us a call soon. I'm sure those tickets will go quick. Now, I also want to let you know about another local event that we've talked about on Out Loud a couple of times. It's kind of a big deal. It's happening this Thursday, April 25th, and it's called Bromance. It's a fundraiser for Basic Rights Oregon. It's happening at the Alberta Rose Theater, which is on Northeast Alberta, I believe at 30th, but again, up on Alberta Street. The Alberta Rose Theater is hosting Bromance because they had another artist that was scheduled to perform on Thursday, April 25th, and they ended up canceling that show. The performer was Michelle Schacht. And for those of you that haven't heard, Michelle Schacht went on an anti-gay tirade in San Francisco a couple weeks ago, which was quite surprising. But the Alberta Rose Theater immediately canceled her performance here in town and offered the venue for the night of Michelle's show, offered it to Basic Rights Oregon to use as a fundraiser. So Bromance is happening Thursday, April 25th. The show starts at 7:30, and there's going to be a lot of different musical talent being featured. Storm Large, Sneaking Out, basically a lot of different people. The Cabin Project, as well as Ashley Flynn and Chris Funk. We're going to take a short musical break, and we'll be back in just a few moments to talk to David Weissman and Beth Stevens about the Queer Documentary Film Festival. But we'll take this music break, and we'll be back in just a moment. The song we're going to hear is from Ashley Flynn, and again, she's performing at Bromance this Thursday evening, and the song is titled Prohibition Rose.
Prohibition Rose knows what she knows, from her hips to her toes, beneath her petticoats. Day and into night, sailors while their time away, in her opium den, spending all their pay, swilling her booze as they wait. From old town to old Shanghai, boys wake up under another sky. They know how, but they can't ask why. When they wake from sleep in their bare feet, shackled on a ship to the Far East.
Around when the cops bust in like a pack of hounds, just Rosie
Welcome back to Out Loud, the queer culture radio show here on KBOO. That song was titled Prohibition Rose from Ashley Flynn. Ashley will be one of the performers this Thursday night, April 25th, at the Alberta Rose Theater. It's a fundraiser for Basic Rights Oregon, and the event is called Bromance. For more information, go to the Basic Rights website. It is basicrights.org. Next, I'd like to move into a conversation about the Queer Documentary Film Festival that's happening here in Portland next month. And I'd like to welcome back to the show David Wiseman. David, welcome back.
Hi, Carla. This is, I think, the seventh year in a row that I've been here to talk about the festival with you.
I know. It is so exciting. And the QDoc Festival gets bigger and better every year. I am so excited. Now, for folks that don't know, this is the only queer documentary film festival in the United States. It's kind of a big deal.
It is. It's the only one. And we think there is still one in Australia, but other than that, there are no other in the world that are just exclusively queer documentaries. So it's really an amazing thing that we have it here in Portland.
It is. And I want to make sure folks know and kind of apologize. We're not going to be able to get into the details of every awesome movie tonight, but I want to give you the website. QueerDocFest.org has the full lineup, information about tickets. Maybe you'd like a pass to the festival. All the details are on the website.
And the dates of the festival are May 16 through 19. Our opening night this year, this is the first time our opening night's actually at the Baghdad Theater, which is huge for us. And then the rest of the festival will be where it was last year, which is at McMenamin's Kennedy School. So May 16 through 19. And I just sent out a post today saying that if you are interested in being around interesting queer people, there will be none in Portland that week except at QDoc. All of them will be at QDoc.
Exactly. The creative ones, the smart ones.
The good-looking ones.
The beautiful people.
That's right. They'll all be at QDoc.
Okay, let's start with opening night, because that is also a big deal. So again, we're talking Thursday, May 16th, doors at 6:30. At the Baghdad Theater, for folks that don't know, that's over on Hawthorne.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie.
The movie. We are really excited. This is very dear to my heart. There's a brand new documentary that just premiered at South by Southwest. It's called I Am Divine. It's about the fabulous Divine, the star of the early John Waters movies, and Hairspray and Pink Flamingos and Female Trouble and the poo-poo-eating Divine from Pink Flamingos. It's a wonderful documentary made by Jeffrey Schwartz, who directed last year's closing night movie, Vito. So Jeffrey's been working fast, and we have this wonderful documentary opening night. And Divine's co-star, Mink Stoll, of many of those early John Waters movies, will be joining us for the opening night of the festival. So we're really, really excited about that.
It is exciting. And many of the movies, just to make sure listeners know, many of the movies will have directors or actors, actresses in attendance as part of the movie. So
yeah, it's one of the things that we always emphasize at QDoc is it's really important that we have the filmmakers here because it changes the whole experience from just being one of watching a movie to a conversation, and it gets very exciting. And yeah, we always love to have the filmmakers here. We got a great group coming.
So something else I want to point out about opening night, again, May 16th, the movie I Am Divine. There's something special happening as part of opening night. Basically, there's going to be a reception in addition to the film. And so talk about that.
Yeah, generally we always have an opening night party with the film. Normally it's after the movie. This year the reception is going to be prior to the movie, and it'll be at the Baghdad Theater. And then afterwards, basically everybody who's at the movie will be invited to come to that wonderful bar behind the Baghdad called the Backstage, which will be a wonderful place for us to party and reminisce and tell our favorite Divine stories.
And look at all the beautiful people and maybe yes, trade phone numbers or whatever.
That's you right.
Know. But something I want folks to know, I did just say 6:30 is when the doors open. So 6:30 is when the reception starts. If you're interested in the film only, that starts at 8 p.m. Again, at the Baghdad Theater on Hawthorne.
Right.
So again, that's I Am Divine, which is going to be awesome. Very important
yes,
piece of our history for the community.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So there are so many other movies that I'm excited about. I guess where should we begin?
Well, you know, when, again, everybody – asks every year what's good. And the great thing about doing a festival that's only 4 days long with 11 programs is that we really get to pick the cream of the crop. We don't have open submissions. We sort of look around what comes out in Sundance, what comes out in Tribeca, what comes out in Berlin. And we, because of who Russ and I are, the connections that we have, we're able to get pretty much most of what we want. And so we get an incredible collection of movies, and they come from all over the world. They deal with contemporary issues. They deal with historical issues. So we've got an incredible collection this year. We've broken some boundaries. Mm-hmm. We have stuff that's kind of genre breaking. We have a film called Interior Leather Bar, which was co-directed by James Franco, and the other co-director, Travis Matthews, will be here with us. And that's kind of a constructed documentary it's a very sexy documentary that is based on a legendary lost 40 minutes of film from the movie Cruising, the controversial movie Cruising from the 80s. Mm-hmm. We've got a wonderful film that we'll hear more about in a little bit called Goodbye Golly Mountain, which is an eco-sexual love story, mm-hmm. It's a serious environmental movie, and it's also a wonderful performance art romp with the wonderful Annie Sprinkle and Beth Stevens, who's the director of the movie and Annie's partner. Mm-hmm. We've got Valentine Road is a very, very powerful HBO film that's going to be our closing night film on Sunday night that won't be broadcast until the fall. And it's a super powerful film about a murder in a high school in Southern California.
Mm-hmm. So I want to just backtrack for a minute because you mentioned the Interior Leather Bar, that movie. Again, these are all documentaries. So the Leather Bar movie is going to be happening on Friday, the 17th of May at 9:15. This movie is one that is a 21 and older screening.
Right.
I just wanted to point that out.
Right.
When you said sexy, you really meant sexy.
Yeah, and I think it's also a McMenamins thing that in terms of alcohol access in the theater that they have limits on that. But yes, that's also a case. Yes, it's a sexy movie too.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I do want to take a moment and welcome Beth to the conversation. Beth, are you with us?
I am. Hi.
Hi. Welcome to Out Loud.
Oh, thanks.
So we were just starting to talk about some of the different movies that are part of the festival, and I want to take a moment and let listeners know about your movie. The Goodbye Golly Mountain is going to be screening on Friday, May 17th at 7 p.m. So tell us, what was the inspiration for you to make this movie?
Oh, well, the inspiration for making this movie was a really destructive kind of coal mining called mountaintop removal. And I was born in West Virginia, and my family, they still live there. And so I came home to visit them during a summer flight in, and I saw from the sky what was going on with the mountains. And I had no idea that the mountains were being destroyed that way. And so I got very upset and decided to make a movie with my partner, Annie Sprinkle.
Okay. And so this documentary, again, happening in Virginia, or West Virginia, excuse me, was it something that took a long time to make? I mean, it sounds like it's something that's so close to your heart. How much time did it take you to make the movie?
I've been working on it for about 3 years.
Okay.
So for me, that's quite a long time. I you know, I hear from other filmmakers that that's not terribly long, but it seems like a long time to me.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what ecosexual means in the title. It's an ecosexual love story, Beth.
Oh, well, ecosexuals are humans that have an erotic attraction towards nature, towards the earth. And so it's partially a metaphor, but it's also partially about people who really do get turned on by, say, going skinny dipping in water or, you know, engaging in wind play or, you know, just being outside naked in the sun, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And how does that connect with the movie? Tell us how it connects with the whole Virginia story that you're telling of the mountaintops.
Well, it's a kind of crazy connection because Annie and I are really sort of movers and shakers in what is developing as a little movement, which we're, you know, calling the eco-sex movement. And we tried to get married early on in our relationship. And, of course, in California, same-sex partners could get married for about 5 minutes, and then Proposition 8 was passed, and no one was allowed to get married again. You know, the same-sex people were not allowed to get married again, and we got upset about that. And so we started doing a project where we would have a wedding every year for these collaborative weddings. And the fourth year of our wedding project, we married the Earth. And when we married the earth, everything really changed. We vowed to love, honor, and cherish the earth until death brought us closer together forever. And we really, truly fell in love with the earth. And that was when I decided that I wanted to really get involved in the fight to stop removal. And so in my mind, which admittedly is a hillbilly mind, right, I sort of put together gay marriage, same-sex marriage, queerness with ecosexuality, mountaintop removal. And for me, these things really complement and strengthen each other, you know, sort of attempts and goals of activism to attain marriage rights for same-sex couples. I feel that those rights should actually be extended to the earth, because I think that the earth is a living entity that's even more queer than queers. And so, and especially Appalachian Mountains, they're very, very queer, right?
Well,
so
Beth, I have to say that, you know, when that when your movie showed up and I started watching it, I thought, oh my God, could this be any more Portland?
Yeah.
You know, it's a serious environmental movie, and it's a lesbian ecosexual movie. I mean, that is about as Portland as you can get. So we are very excited to have you and Annie coming up here for it.
Oh, we're super excited to come up, too. We're really, really looking forward to it. And I wrote you all and said, you know, I have a cousin coming out from West Virginia just to come to the screening.
Yeah.
All right.
That's awesome. It's
going to
be
very exciting.
A family affair. A family affair.
Totally.
Wonderful.
Totally. Yeah. And you were talking about interior leather bar.
Yeah.
Right? Just before this, well, Keith Wilson was the editor for Goodbye Golly Mountain, and he was also, he's one of the producers, and he wasn't even a cinematographer for Interior Leather Bar.
Yes, good. Yes, that's absolutely right.
Very incestuous, this whole thing, right? Which, of course,
Q-Doc loves incestuousness. It's
it's kind of the rainbow way, but we shouldn't
that's
say
right.
that.
That's right.
Gary, West Virginia, right?
So, oh, no, let's not go there.
Essentially, we are all hillbillies, honey.
Oh, this is funny. Now, I just want to let our listeners know, if you're just joining the conversation, you're listening to Out Loud. This is the Queer Culture Radio Show. We're focusing on Q-Doc, the Queer Documentary Film Festival, happening May 16th through the 19th. We have Beth Stevens on the phone with us, and here in studio is David Wiseman. And Beth is going to be coming to Portland along with Annie Sprinkle to be part of the movie that's showing. Again, the movie is titled Goodbye Golly Mountain, an Eco-Sexual Love Story, happening Friday, May 17th at 7 p.m. at McMiniman's Kennedy School Theater here in Northeast Portland. And so just want listeners to know, again, you can come and meet Beth and meet Annie at the show if you'd like to. And
well, that would be great. We'd love to meet the Portland hillbillies.
There's a lot of them.
Yes. And so are you working on any other movies?
Well, actually, we're working on a theater piece, and that's going to premiere in June. And it's called Earthy, an Ecosexual Boot Camp.
Uh-huh.
We're going to get really radical in that one.
Good. And any chance you're going to tour and come to Portland with that theater show?
We're premiering it in San Francisco during the National Queer Cultural Festival, and then we're going to take it to London, because we're having a big eco-sex lab workshop in England for a week, and we're going to have one in France for the week before that. So we're very busy with the eco-sexual.
Right on. That's great. That is wonderful. Now, Beth, we need to wrap things up just because we want to talk about a couple of the other movies that are part of the festival. But before we say goodbye, any closing thoughts that you'd like to leave with our listeners, or anything else you wanted to share?
Well, I just think it's fantastic that Portland has a queer documentary festival, and I'm really grateful that we're getting to show our film in it. You know, super, super excited. The film didn't be completely finished except for a few credits. So, you know, I just want to put that out there, because we launched a Kickstarter campaign, and luckily we actually made our goal, but we have to wait until we can finish our credits. So I'll just put that out there. We're really grateful, and if anyone wants to go to the Kickstarter campaign, bring it on.
Okay, that's great.
Uh-huh.
Well, we can't wait to meet you up here, Beth. We're really looking forward to it.
Yes. We're super excited, and the program was fantastic.
Great.
It really does. We want to talk about some of the other exciting things that are going to be happening, but thank you so much for joining us this evening, and we'll see you at the movie.
Okay, you take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. So we just said goodbye to Beth Stevens, who is the director of Goodbye Golly Mountain, an eco-sexual love story, which is part of the Queer Documentary Film Festival happening next month. Beth's movie will be showing Friday, May 17th at 7 p.m. at McMiniman's Kennedy School Theater. So now also here in studio is David Wiseman, who's one of the co-creators of the Documentary Film Festival. Maybe let's take just one moment and give some acknowledgement to your other co-creator.
Yeah, Russ Gage and I started this together 7 years ago. Russ and I know each other from San Francisco, and I always say that Russ is the brains and I'm the mouth
okay.
of the festival. But we it's such a fun project for the two of us to do, so we really love doing QDoc for Portland.
Right, and I'm going to be a little shameless, and this is a personal opinion, not speaking on behalf of KABU, but this is one of my favorite things that happens in Portland. So it really is a bunch of beautiful people that come, a bunch of smart people that come. I love to see the diversity, you know, in the audience, and who shows up to these movies is an incredible cross-section of our community. And so I'm looking forward to the movies. Again, the films are happening May 16th to the 19th. And for the full lineup, again, we're not going to be able to talk about every single movie tonight, but you want to go to the website is queerdocfest.org. You can find out ticket information as well as all the movies on the website.
And you can just Google QDoc Portland if you forget the name of the URL, too. We're very easy to find on the web. One of the things that people always ask is, what should I see? And there's two ways of answering that. One is go see the movies that sounds interesting to you. And the other is to go completely the opposite direction. Go to the movies that you might not see, because all of them are really good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe go see, if you're a young gay man, go see the movie about the older lesbians, or vice mm-hmm. versa. And because the range of material is so interesting, and so the movies are so well done, that it does give you exposure to aspects of queer life in other parts of the world and different generations that you might not be exposed to otherwise.
And it's so important, the fact that these are all documentaries, you know, and there's so much about our own, you know, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender stories from our past that we don't know. This stuff isn't taught in school.
We've got a great film called Lesbiana, which is coming out of French Canada. And Lesbiana looks back at the years of lesbian separatism in the mm-hmm. 70s and 80s and the attempt to really create a separate and parallel revolutionary women's culture. And it's really good. It's very moving. The women in it are really articulate and interesting and really still very political. It's a wonderful, wonderful film. A very unusual film that we have too, which is fantastic for music people, is a film called Bayou Maharaja, which is about a New Orleans pianist named James Booker. And Dr. John once described him as the best black, gay, one-eyed, junky piano genius New Orleans has ever produced. And it's a fabulous documentary about the pianist James Booker.
And that's going to be Sunday the 19th at 12:30.
Yes.
And I just want to go back to the Lesbiana, Saturday the 18th at 5 p.m. Again, all movies except the opening night, but all movies are at McMiniman's Kennedy School Theater.
And a wonderful film. There's actually been three films that have come out in the last year that deal with the situation of gays and lesbians in Africa. The one that we're showing is called Born This Way, and it deals with the country of Cameroon and both the incredibly scary situation that exists for gays and lesbians there, as well as the extraordinary, inspiring courage of the people who are standing up under really scary circumstances and fighting for their rights and fighting for liberation. It's a really powerful and beautiful film.
So Born This Way is Saturday the 18th at 2:30.
Yeah.
The co-director Deb Tolman will be in attendance for that one.
Yeah, and Buck Angel is a very interesting character who will be here. Buck Angel is a F2M transsexual who does gay male porn. And Buck has a lot of fans, both in among women and men and trans folk, and Buck will be attending the festival, too, on Saturday night, May 18th.
And that movie is called Mr. Angel, and that is also a 21 and older event. So.
And a local film, partially local, co-directed by Eric Slade, who's a Portlander who directed the movie about Harry Hay many years ago called Hope Along the Wind. Mm-hmm. There's a film that Eric Slade made with Stephen Silla from Seattle, and it's called Big Joy, The Adventures of James Broughton. This film has been getting rave reviews. It's just been playing at Tribeca in New York. And it's about the very kind of exuberant, crazy experimental filmmaker and poet James Broughton, who was part of the bohemian scene in San Francisco in the 50s and 60s, and a kind of a visionary, free-spirited gay guy. And it's a wonderful, wonderful movie that's going to be a big ticket on Saturday, May 18th at 7 p.m.
And again, both directors will be in attendance.
Yes, they will.
I want to take just one moment and talk about tickets.
Yeah.
So, listeners, hopefully you've been enjoying hearing about all these different movies. David has offered up a pair of tickets as a giveaway. You are welcome to choose. Basically, we're offering a pair of tickets to any movie as part of the film festival. And if you'd like to go see a movie with you and a friend, give us a call here at 503-231-8032. I also want to say congratulations to Jennifer. She called earlier and she's going to be going to the Red Dress Party. So hope you enjoy that party, Jennifer. Again, if you want a pair of tickets to the Queer Documentary Film Festival, give us a call right now at 503-231-8032. So we only have a minute or two left to talk about movies. But now, listeners, I want to let you know we are going to be talking about the film festival again closer to the film festival. So we will have David or someone from the film festival come back and tell us more. But as we I just want to let people know there's one other movie that really caught my eye called I Am a Woman Now, and it's happening at Sunday, May 19th at 4:30 p.m. This is another one that's got an international feel to it. Tell us.
Yeah, I Am a Woman Now deals with five elderly European women from different countries in Europe, all of whom were among the first generation of transgenders who were operated on in Casablanca in the 50s and the 60s. And they have lived as women for many, many years, and it's as much a movie about aging as it is about transsexuality and queer issues. They're very interesting, articulate women. The interviews are beautiful. And it's just really a remarkable story to get to hear these various women speaking in their 70s and 80s.
And telling their own stories. That's what I love about this film festival. All these documentaries, you're hearing people tell their own stories. It's awesome. Very, very powerful. Now, I apologize. We need to say goodbye. But David, thank you and the team to, you know, everyone who's been involved with QDoc over the years. I know you've got volunteers behind the scenes. Let me just ask real quick, if you need volunteers, should people contact you guys?
Yeah, people can contact us through the website at queerdocfest.org, just through the QDoc website. And there's a little contact us. And if people want to volunteer, they should send in an email to us.
Okay, perfect. So again, we're going to come back in May and talk more about these awesome documentary movies. But for now, David, any closing thoughts or other things you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, it's just, again, it's a very diverse range of films. It's a really fun film festival to come to. We give a good party, and there's lots of filmmakers coming. So take a look at our program and come to as many films as you can.
And bring a friend or your family or someone who would like to hear these stories or maybe needs to hear these stories. So, again, thank you so much for joining us, David. Thank you to Beth Stevens for joining us on the phone. Again, she's the director of Goodbye Golly Mountain, an eco-sexual love story. Thanks, Carla. Yeah, thank you. You're welcome. I love your film festival. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in this evening. Even though we have to say goodbye to QDoc, stay tuned. We'll be hearing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. And we'll be back in 2 weeks. So thank you for listening. Until next time, stay proud and live out loud.
We are not declaring nuclear war on a foreign state. We are not bringing a virus in that could wipe out our agriculture sector forever. We are allowing two people who love each other to have that recognised. And I can't see what's wrong with that for love nor money, sir. I just cannot.
What about Jesus saying in the Gospel of Luke, if you want to be a follower of mine, you must give up all your possessions? You tell me how you deal with that, and then I'll tell you how I deal with Leviticus.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Kiwi lawmakers and a retired Episcopal bishop address marriage matters, Paris protests get uglier as equality draws near, and a half-baked policy change gets the Boy Scouts of America less than honorable mention. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 20th, 2013.
The eyes are 77, the nose are 44.
New Zealand lawmakers have made theirs the first country in the Asia-Pacific region and the 13th in the world to open civil marriage to same-gender couples. Overwhelming approval of the bill was expected on its third and final reading on April 17th in the country's unicameral House of Representatives. The marriage, definition of marriage, amendment bill now only needs royal assent, which is just a formality. The first marriages of lesbian and gay couples in New Zealand should begin in August. The bill's chief sponsor was out lesbian MP Louisa Wall, who wore a colorful rainbow top for the final vote. She got celebratory bouquets and hugs by several MPs after the tally was announced, while other MPs applauded the packed public galleries of equality advocates as they cheered and sang. MP Jamie Lee Ross of the governing center-right National Party supported the bill, arguing that nobody gets hurt when gay couples say they're married, but gay couples who want to be married are hurt when they are kept from marrying by the state. "I'm gay," said Labour MP Marion Street. "I don't wish to get married, but I don't want not to be able to get married." The star of the debate, judging by how widely distributed his remarks have become, was National MP Maurice Williamson. You'll hear his humorous and heartfelt comments and more on this story later in the program.
A civil marriage equality bill that enjoys popular support and is expected to pass has traveled a much uglier road in France. Large street protests that began several weeks ago opposing the legislation and its most vocal supporter, Socialist President François Hollande, have become increasingly volatile. An attempt to march on the presidential palace in Paris earlier this month was stopped by a strong police presence. Officers needed tear gas to turn back the crowd, and there were several arrests. Assaults on gay people across the country have escalated, and four men invaded and threatened patrons at a gay bar in Lille late this week, beating the manager and causing property damage. About 70 protesters were taken into custody earlier in the week after they tried to set up an opposition campsite outside the National Assembly, the lower house of parliament. Government officials renewed calls for restraint after riot police again used tear gas to disperse protesters at a demonstration in Paris's Latin Quarter. Marriage equality opponents in the nominally Roman Catholic country include church hardliners, social conservatives, French Muslims, and evangelical Christians. Roman Catholic Cardinal André Ventrois, the Archbishop of Paris, warned fellow bishops at a national conference this week that the government's plan to open marriage to same-gender couples could start a social civil war in France. "This is the way a violent society develops," he claimed. Violence has even spread to France's National Assembly. Punches were reportedly thrown in a protracted scuffle in the chamber late this week after a 25-hour debate on the marriage equality measure. One lawmaker said he'd never seen anything like it in his 30 years in the lower chamber. Some blamed fatigue and the high emotions brought on by the controversial nature of the issue.
A constitutional convention in Ireland has overwhelmingly approved a proposed amendment to open civil marriage to same-gender couples there. 79 of the 100 delegates meeting in Dublin on April 14th voted in favor. The convention also recommended that the Irish government pass laws incorporating changed arrangements in regard to the parentage, guardianship, and the upbringing of children. The convention was set up last year by the Fine Gael Labour coalition government and charged with secularizing much of the Irish constitution. Convention delegates included politicians from the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland, as well as members of the public. The government is now required to hold parliamentary debate on the issue within 4 months. Justice Minister Alan Shatter told reporters that there was a reasonable prospect that the government would also hold a public referendum on the issue before the next general election. But officials are reportedly in no hurry to schedule one. Full civil marriage equality would be an upgrade from the civil partnerships created for Irish same-gender couples 2 years ago. Roman Catholic church leaders predictably opposed the idea, claiming that religious rights would be trampled in the process. But the activist group Marriage Equality Ireland announced this week that a poll it commissioned earlier this year showed public support for marriage equality has reached 75%.
Despite post-election loss public hand-wringing that the party needs to be more inclusive, the Republican National Committee reaffirmed its opposition to civil marriage equality during its 3-day spring meeting this week in Los Angeles. one of 12 unanimously approved resolutions insists that marriage is a union between one man and one woman. An addendum asks the U.S. Supreme Court to uphold the constitutionality of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act and California's Proposition 8. The declarations ignore recent public opinion polls showing that more than half of the American people now support marriage equality. While Republican Senators Rob Portman of Ohio and Mark Kirk of Illinois each recently announced his support, they are clearly the exception to the party's rule. Tony Perkins of the Reactionary Family Research Council, a mainstay contributor to Republican coffers, told his members to withhold support to the party if it ever endorses marriage equality. He warned in a letter co-signed by the leaders of 10 other influential conservative groups to party chairman Reince Priebus prior to the meeting that an abandonment of its principles will necessarily result in the abandonment of our constituents to their support.
A spokesman for the Boy Scouts of America announced this week that officials were proposing a policy change to allow membership by openly gay youth, but that gay and lesbian adults would still be denied leadership positions. A months-long survey of some 200,000 respondents on the issue that included leaders of many church and religious groups was described by spokesman Darren Smith as the most comprehensive listening exercise in the history of scouting. The resulting report concluded that a change in the membership policy specific to youth only would be consistent with the religious beliefs of the BSA's major chartered organizations. Smith told Reuters that if the resolution is approved by the 1,400-member National Council at its annual meeting in Texas the week of May 20th, no youth may be denied membership in the Boy Scouts of America on the basis of sexual orientation or preference alone. Several LGBT advocacy groups, however, immediately criticized the Scouts for not also lifting its ban on out adult leaders. GLAD spokesman Rich Ferraro complained that by refusing to consider an end to its ban on gay and lesbian parents, the Boy Scouts have missed an opportunity to exercise leadership and usher the organization back to relevancy.
In other youth news, two of the leading Roman Catholic schools in the African country of Ghana made headlines this week for expelling at least 53 allegedly gay and lesbian students. 19 young men were kicked out of Opukuwari Secondary High School in Ashanti on April 15th for practicing homosexuality, according to Radio XYZ, which also reported that the students had managed to form a society on campus and regularly meet to discuss how to convince more students to practice the act. More than 34 students were reportedly expelled from the Wesley Girls Senior High School in Kumasi on April 12th for what the Ghana Herald called indulging in the bestial and detestable act of lesbianism. Parents at each school were apparently notified before their children were expelled and presumably given the reason. Ghanaian human rights activists are calling on the government to intervene. MacDarlin Kabina, director of Ghana's Center for Popular Education and Human Rights, told Gay Star News that outing students to their parents is irresponsible and dangerous and could cripple these young people's futures. Many could end up on the streets and eventually be pushed into a life of crime. The school should follow their religious ethics, he added, learning to love, care, and support each other, as the Bible mentions.
And finally, activists in queer-friendly Sydney were shocked earlier this week when authorities ordered the removal of the Oxford Street Rainbow Crossing that had been painted for the city's 35th Mardi Gras celebration. Thousands signed a petition calling for the crossing to become a permanent part of what is the center of Sydney's LGBT community. But ironically named New South Wales Roads Minister Duncan Gay said that the crossing had to be removed for safety reasons, claiming that there had been at least 15 near misses in the past month as people posed for photos in the middle of the crossing. He said that he was all in favor of an alternative permanent rainbow attraction if the Sydney City Council decides to create one off state roads. People across Australia and in other countries have taken to the streets to create chalk protest rainbows. It apparently began when James Brechney chalked a rainbow crossing in front of his home and posted a photo on Facebook. His do-it-yourself rainbow crossings page has since been liked more than 17,000 times and sparked similar rainbows on streets across the country. Shelves in stores that carry chalk have reportedly been emptied in some cities. Many sympathetic Sydney businesses have marked the pavement outside their shops, bars, and restaurants to show support for the return of the original crossing, which cost about $65,000 to install and about $30,000 to remove. Chalked rainbows have also been spotted as far away as France, the U.S., Germany, and Kenya.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 20th, 2013. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep This Way Out on the air at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
the bishop boldly bandies with bigots. But first, a marriage equality rainbow rises over New Zealand. New Zealand became the 13th nation in the world this week and the first in the Asia-Pacific region to open civil marriage to same-gender couples. Legislative approval followed debate on the third and final reading of the Marriage Definition of Marriage Amendment on April 17th. Colorfully out Labour MP Louisa Wall was the measure's chief sponsor, and she donned a rainbow top for the occasion. The vote wasn't really in doubt, though no one knew exactly how large the margin would be. 62-year-old National Party MP Maurice Williamson became an internet sensation for his humorous and heartfelt comments during debate.
Sir, I want to first of all congratulate Louisa Wall for this bill, and I want to say, sir, that the good news about the years in this Parliament is you learn to deflect all of the dreadful sort of fire and brimstone accusations that are going to happen, sir. I've had a reverend in my local electorate call, the gay onslaught will start the day after this bill is passed. Now, sir, we're really struggling to know what the gay onslaught will look like. We don't know if it'll come down the Pakuranga Highway as a series of troops, or whether it'll be a gas that flows in over the electorate and locks us all in. I also, sir, had a Catholic priest tell me that I was supporting an unnatural act. I found that quite interesting coming from someone who's taken an oath of celibacy for his whole life. We'll go with celibacy. Okay. I haven't done it, so I don't know what it's about. I also had a letter telling me I would burn in the fires of hell for eternity, and that was a bad mistake because I've got a degree in physics. I used the thermodynamic laws of physics. I put in my body weight and my humidity and so on. I assumed the furnace to be at 5,000 degrees and I will last for just on 2.1 seconds. It's hardly eternity. What do you think? And some more disgusting claims about what adoption would be. Well, sir, I've got three fantastic adopted kids. I know how good adoption is, and I found some of it just disgraceful. I found some of the bullying tactics really evil. And, sir, I gave up being scared of bullies when I was at primary school. However, a huge amount of the opposition was from moderates, from people who were concerned, who were seriously worried what this might do to the fabric of our society. I respect their concern. I respect their worry. They were worried about what it might do to their families and so on. Let me repeat to them now, sir. All we are doing with this bill is allowing two people who love each other to have that love recognised by way of marriage. That is all we are doing. We are not declaring nuclear war on a foreign state. We are not bringing a virus in that could wipe out our agriculture sector forever. We are allowing two people who love each other to have that recognised. And I can't see what's wrong with that for love nor money, sir. I just cannot. I cannot understand why someone would be opposed. I understand why people don't like what it is that others do. That's fine. We're all in that category. But I give a promise to those people who are opposed to this bill right now. I give you a watertight guaranteed promise. The sun will still rise tomorrow. Your teenage daughter will still argue back with you as if she knows everything. Your mortgage will not grow. You will not have skin diseases or rashes or toads in your bed, sir. The world will just carry on. So don't make this into a big deal. This is fantastic for the people it affects, but for the rest of us, life will go on. And finally, can I say, sir, one of the messages I had was that this bill was the cause of our drought. This bill was the cause of our drought. Well, if any of you follow my Twitter account, you will see that in the Pakuranga electorate this morning, it was pouring with rain. We have the most enormous big gay rainbow across my electorate. It has to be a sign, sir. It has to be a sign. If you're a believer, it's certainly a sign. And can I finish for all those who are concerned about this with a quote from the Bible? It's Deuteronomy. I thought Deuteronomy was a cat out of cats, but never mind. It's Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 29. Be ye not afraid.
Finally, after the last MP had spoken and a bit of housekeeping was handled by the Speaker, the final tally was officially announced.
Order. Members and Bagheri, can I just ask that you refrain
from any comment. There will be a waiata after the clerk has announced the third reading. Members, the ayes are 77, the noes are 44.
Someone in the gallery began singing the indigenous Maori love song Pokari Kari Ana. Its tune was reportedly borrowed in 1912 from the Irish hymn to the Blessed Virgin. The lyrics, roughly translated, include, "O my beloved, come back to me. My heart is breaking of love for you." The first legal weddings of lesbian and gay couples in New Zealand are expected to begin in August. As Toll Road, a self-described online site with homosexual tendencies, proclaimed, this is what equality sounds like.
This is Bishop Gene Robinson, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine.
He was ushered into office under heavy security in 2003 and recently retired as a respected religious leader and author. That may sound like an episode of The Borgias, but it's the story of Gene Robinson, the Episcopal Church's first openly gay bishop. The former head of the Diocese of New Hampshire has been speaking around the country about his book, God Believes in Love, Straight Talk About Gay Marriage, and a documentary on his life called Love Free or Die. He visited his home turf in Concord, New Hampshire recently, where WNHN broadcaster Arnie Arneson took him back to the beginning.
What everyone knows about you is that you are a gay man. When did you know that?
You know, it's when did you know and when did you know? Gay wasn't a word. Well, it was a word, but it meant like a fun party, right?
Right, exactly.
So there were no labels, so it was hard to put a label on something that really wasn't talked about. If it was talked about, it was always in a whisper and always with a kind of condemning tone. Mm-hmm. But I can remember when I was about 12, some friends of mine got hold of a Playboy magazine, which was less risque, by the way, than what you can see on TV any day today.
Yeah, back
right?
then, yeah. Exactly.
But I had this sense that these pictures were doing more for them than they were doing for me. And almost at the same instant, I realized I'd better not say that. That not only would it endanger our friendship, but that I might physically be in danger as well. And that began the kind of bifurcated life that most gay and lesbian people, certainly the ones who grew up when I did, started to lead. So you had this self that you put out to the world,
yeah,
and then there was the real self that you told no one about.
Now, you knew that you couldn't share this, and you knew that you needed to some extent be afraid. Did you also know that you needed to not share it and be afraid of your parents? Would your parents have been accepting?
So that would be the last place you would share it.
Yeah.
This is how discrimination and the experience of being a minority is different from an ethnic minority. Because, you know, if you're black and you get called the N-word, your parents have probably lived through that. And they've got resources to comfort you and make you strong. But if you suspect that you're homosexual, then it's the last place you would go because you might lose that thing known as home. And even today, 40% of all the kids living homeless on the streets of our cities are gay and lesbian kids who have been thrown out when they came out.
Oh, my God.
So we have made huge progress, and there is still so far to go. We've got gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender kids living on our streets because they have been thrown out of their homes when they came out.
So, oh gosh. So as you're describing it, you knew you were different. You go to New York. Do you go to New York because you think New York is the place where you get to find yourself, where you get to celebrate who you
no,
are?
So I
or
go
is
to...
New York part of the cloister where you still have to live this bifurcated life and there's this gene and then there's that gene?
Well, not only was I trying to live this bifurcated life, but I was trying to tame that life that horrified me because I had been told day in and day out that to be attracted to someone of the same gender was an abomination to God. And so I got into therapy twice a week. Gosh, I'd love to have all that money back. You know? I got in therapy twice a week to become straight. In those days, we thought that was possible.
Right.
No one could have been more motivated than I was. I wanted a family. I had great relationships with women, and I wanted to be married. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of 2 years, I felt I was ready for a relationship with a woman and met a wonderful woman from Southern New Hampshire. And I told her within 2 weeks of meeting her that, you know, what relationships I had been with men, been in therapy. I thought I was ready for this. And we fell in love. And about a month before the wedding, I broke down in tears and said to her, you know, I'm just so fearful that this is going to raise its ugly head again. And she said, if that should happen, we love each other enough, we'll deal with it. And 13 years later, we did. And we decided, really quite amazingly, that we were both paying too high a price for this, and that the only way we could live up to our wedding vow to honor one another in the name of God was to let each other go. And in fact, we went back to church to end our marriage. We took a priest with us to the judge's chambers for our divorce decree, and then we went back to his church, and in the context of a communion service, we asked each other's forgiveness in any ways that we had hurt one another. We pledged ourselves to the joint raising of our two children. And we gave our wedding rings back to each other as the symbol of the vows that we no longer held each other to. And we cried a lot and had communion. It was just one of the most healing moments of my whole life.
Talk to me about this book. What is the motive for God Believes in Love?
We're at this astounding moment in American history. As of the election, we have now 9 states where marriage equality is the law, plus the District of Columbia. But that's the low-hanging fruit, right? There are many, many, many places in America where that's not true. And we even have quite a lot of people who are feeling more tolerant, certainly, of gay and lesbian people. I think the reason is that now pretty much everyone in America knows they know someone gay. But they're not ready to go all the way to advocating for marriage. And the questions that I ask in this book, I basically imagined a conversation between me and one of these people who are reasonably tolerant, but they really can't find their way all the way to marriage. And so each one of those questions forms a chapter in the book, and I try to answer those. It looks at legal stuff and constitutional stuff and religious stuff. It's a general book that sort of looks at the whole issue of marriage for same-gender couples. And rather than having to read a whole book on the legal stuff or a whole book on the religious, biblical stuff, it answers those questions in a form that I think will not only make sense to people who actually have those questions, but also it provides a script for those of us who are advocates but don't know what we'll say to a next-door neighbor or a coworker they ask us those questions.
Well, I was going to ask the question. When you have this discussion with other clergy in faiths that tend to be very antagonistic to the idea of gay marriage and homosexuality, how do you challenge them?
I never tell them what they should think or believe. I only tell them what I believe.
All right.
And how I came to believe it.
Okay.
And then I let that witness do its work. I would even say, then I let the Holy Spirit take over and do the Holy Spirit's work in that person. When we shake our finger and tell someone else what they should think and believe, we get nowhere.
Well, you know who I'm thinking of? I'm thinking about the fact that they could not get their way in the United States, and so a lot of Episcopalians went to Asia, went to Africa. How did you deal with those men, in particular, I suppose there were no women, when they were so intolerant of you? How did you converse?
Well, yeah, I mean, you kill them with kindness, right?
That's charm the pants off of them, Gene.
Absolutely,
I know it.
You know, because that is the first moment when they become confused. And confusion is a real step forward above certainty, right? And so it gives me an opportunity to be in their midst and just to challenge some of those things. So, for instance, I love when I'm debating someone who is divorced and remarried. So I say to them, I'll tell you what I think about homosexuality in the Bible. If you'll tell me how you can be remarried, when Jesus says remarriage after divorce is adultery.
Right.
You tell me how you deal with that. Or I will say, you consider yourself a biblical literalist, and you believe it's just straight and true, just read it. So what about Jesus saying in the Gospel of Luke, if you want to be a follower of mine, you must give up all your possessions. You tell me how you deal with that, and then I'll tell you how I deal with Leviticus.
In some circles, they call that mighty fine preaching from retired Episcopal Bishop Gene Robinson. His latest book is God Believes in Love, Straight Talk About Gay Marriage. Arnie Arneson sang in the choir.
I want to get married, we should get married.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Rick Watts and Wenzel Jones contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride and to Arnie Arneson and WNHN-FM in Concord, New Hampshire. Daniel J. Cartier performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by the Yavanna Foundation and by our generous listener supporters. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out about our 25-year history and how you can get involved. While you're there, check out the links to our podcast, blog, and Facebook page. You can also hear This Way Out on iTunes. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email TWORadio@AOL.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038 USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 2BBB Bellingham, New South Wales, KUGS Bellingham, Washington, CJSF Burnaby, British Columbia, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned!
And you are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, also heard at 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis and Albany, and of course around the world at www.kbu.fm. The time is 7:02. Hard Radio, Hard Knock Radio is up next after these messages.
KBOO Community Radio continues the broadcast of the 2013 Ilahi Lecture Series on Wednesday, April 24th, when we'll broadcast a talk by Catherine Austin Fitz.
Managing member of Solari Investment Advisory Services, Catherine Austin Fitz is also a publisher of the Solari Report. She served as Assistant Secretary of Housing, Federal Housing Commissioner in the first Bush administration, and Managing Director of Wall Street firm Dillon Reed & Co., Inc. Fitz has designed and closed over 25 billion transactions and investments to date and has led portfolio investment strategy for $300 billion of financial assets and liabilities.
Catherine Austin Fitz will be speaking at the First Congregational Church in Portland, and KBOO will broadcast the talk live at 7 p.m. Wednesday, April 24th. More information can be found at kboo.fm/Ilahi2013.
One, two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
It's history. It's history. Never been done before. Never been done.
about a subject.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another edition. It is Hard Knock Radio. Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. On today's show, we continue our series on education and how it can be improved. Our guests include Chris Chapman and Derica Blackman as we talk about black male and female achievement. All that and more coming up.
Bobby Seale here. I'm the former chairman, founder, and the old national organizer of the Black Panther Party. The Black Panther Party was a political revolutionary organization out of the